When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Who Cares About the Rock Hall, a podcast about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm your host, Joe Quazala. I know entirely too much about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but that is the premise of the show, and that's why you're listening. With me, as always, is my co-host, the skeptic, the voice of the people, Kristen Studdard. Hey, Kristen.
Hello. Hello and hello.
It's a morning record, but I'm hoping no one will be able to even tell that it's different from anything that we otherwise do. We're in the thick of it. The ballot is out. We are doing our artist episodes, and we are excited to bring on our guest today, an award-winning journalist, author of Shine Bright, A Very Personal History of Black Women in Pop, and also one of the newest members to the nominating committee, Danielle Smith. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
I am thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First off, congratulations. As the newest, one of the newest members to the nominating committee.
Okay, love it.
A high distinction. I know, and we know, and the people listening to our show know that when we're lucky to have nominating committee members on the show, they often cannot talk much about that process.
Or I feel like I'm under very strict. I have very strict parameters, and I think I laugh at them because it's slightly dramatic. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's kind of important. We vote behind in real life, when we're voting for candidates for office, we vote privately. It's a secret ballot. And I think there's reasons for that, because you just really want to do what you feel is right in your listening heart, without feeling like your opinion has been, I don't know, just imposed upon by others. So I actually like it.
I think it's great. I'm happy that you're there. We'll dance around it a little bit, in the sense that, why don't we talk about before you joined the committee, and just to get your general reference level for the hall. And were you a voter before you were invited to the committee?
I've been a voter for years, but I didn't vote every year.
Okay. And now, is that out of rebellion or just out of forgetting?
man, listen, mostly it was out of rebellion, I would say. Occasionally it was out of busyness. When I've been the editor in chief of Vibe, I've been the editor of Billboard. So sometimes, it literally would get lost in the mail. But I like the Rock Hall a lot and have been a fan of it for many, many years. But I'm a fan of the Rock Hall in the way probably that I am of the Grammys, and as I am of the Billboard charts, which is, it's all problematic. But right. it's the rubric that we have, though, and we should try to make them the best and as fair as they can be. So it's nice to be not on the outside, shaking my cane at the cloud, to be on the other side going, whoa, so this is what you guys have been doing all this time.
Yeah. And, like you said, there are issues with these institutions, but we also have to acknowledge, like, these are the ones we have. And, you could try to start a new Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but, you're roughly, 35 years behind the one that got to have Chuck Berry literally there in the beginning. So it's going to be difficult to compete. That's great.
And I feel like that's kind of where the show comes from. At least, like, my perspective usually on the show has been like, I mean, it's called Who Cares About the Rock Hall. And we really began with, like, me being like, who cares who gets in, put them all in, put no one in. I don't care. Like, it's already, so completely skewed and off and wrong in many ways. And like, what's the point? But then, you know, I've slowly been sipping the Kool-Aid now for a few years, and now I'm a little more invested. And I think I have a, it's just harder and harder every year, because the, like, in order to really make a meaningful impact, like statistically on like the number of Black people in the hall, the number of women in the hall, the, you know, just like statistically to make a dent just based on what has already existed, like, you know, the stock is already very strong and it's a very white male stock. And so to like really make an impactful dent, it's difficult. And like, I think this year's kind of class isn't necessarily going to do much for that. Like this year's ballot doesn't like give us a big opportunity in the ways that like a few years in the past couple of years, I've been like, oh, you could make an all Black class or you could make an all female class. If you, you know, like ballots, like your ballot, you could vote only for Black artists. You could vote only for female artists. I don't think there's ever been a possibility that you could vote for only Black female artists. Like, you know, yeah, all five, although right. This year now you get to vote for seven, which is cool. But like, I think that that's like, you know, that's just kind of the premise at the base. We're going to be dealing with that, which is, you know, its own little frustration, but at the same time, it's like, what are we going to do? Turn our back and like,
I mean, from my side, what we're going to do is just, and not necessarily speaking as a member of the nominating committee, but just speaking of myself as a journalist and author and someone who cares a lot about music and Black music and has been committed for my entire career, particularly to Black artists receiving the credit that they're due, is to not be discouraged by the fact that the Rock Hall is a big ship to turn around.
Yes.
It's a big ship to turn around. But the thing that excites me, I think, the most is, well, one, I'm a studier of Rock Hall speeches. We all have our nerdyisms, and that is one of mine. And I should say that I'm a fan of all award speeches, but because I feel like people are so in their feelings in that moment. Mm-hmm. Like they're so in their feelings, even if they know it's like at the Rock Hall, you know it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
At Grammys and stuff, you ostensibly don't know, and it's like, oh my God, I won! But at the Rock Hall, you know. And so this thing of there being someone that walks you into the Hall of Fame, like they do to the Baseball Hall of Fame or the, you know, the NFL Hall of Fame and those kinds of things. One, that's dramatic. But when I see people, definitely Black people and women artists, but all artists really, pretty much, the amount of kind of relief or this feeling like when you get to the gates of heaven, somebody's going to say, hey, job well done. Mm-hmm. It's so intense and real. It's like, and to see, I'm thinking particularly of when the OJs got in.
Mm.
And for right now, I'm forgetting the name of the lead singer that's not Eddie LaVert.
Yeah, it escapes me as well. I could look it up quickly and then say it as though I thought of it.
Well, he said from the podium, holding it, this is a really mean business. He said, this is a really mean business. Because the OJs, by the time they were in the Rock Hall, should have been in the Rock Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of thing to me that makes me say, it's not unimportant. It matters to folks. When I think of Mariah Carey walking in Gladys Knight, and at that moment, I think it was important for both of them. But I feel like a lot of people thought at that time in Mariah's career that she wasn't soulful, that she was fake or too pop, or maybe didn't have the sort of gravity that a Gladys Knight type person would have. And she got up there and talked about listening to Gladys Knight under the kitchen table and how much she just lived for how much blues Gladys had in her voice, even as a teenager, 17, 18, 19 years old. And that's what inspired her, in addition to, of course, her mom being an opera singer. But that's what inspired her to become Mariah Carey, all caps Mariah Carey. And then for Gladys to come up and embrace her, I literally think that was, well, one, Gladys should have been in also, and it was great that she got in, and it's great that she's in. But I also think that was Gladys reaching back and saying, you guys need to stop messing with this girl. I love her. She should be loved. So it's just, it's not unimportant. Is it weird? Yes, but it's not unimportant.
No, you're right. I mean, and like, you know, what Kristen was saying and what I would remind Kristen of.
I was just going to say, I'm like, Joe is so happy to hear you say that. I'm like, well, that it's, is his thesis about the hall.
Because when Kristen started to attend these ceremonies or at least watch some of them with me, I think one of the things that was resonating was that you could feel the moment when these artists accept and when the guests induct them. You really can't. You can tell. Like, if you were skeptical before, even the most cynical. And sometimes artists have to act cynical for self-preservation when they're not in for years. And I get that. And we continue to see it every single year since the hall existed. Is it rock and roll to kind of look at your shoes and say like, well, I hope one day they'll induct me? No, you kind of have to say, fuck that place. If they don't want me, it's a conspiracy and, you know, all that. But then when you get to that moment, regardless of what you said before, you see these artists pause and see, like, they just got to watch themselves get a Lifetime Achievement Award from the documentary that they show. That is always the most, like, get you hyped up for an artist, like, so expertly designed to just convert the most skeptical person into like, let's go.
And in some cases really introduce people to artists that they otherwise would not be paying attention to at all. If you're a soul and R&B fan, then maybe you get introduced to some old rock that you didn't know about, and vice versa. It's just such a effing thrill, honestly. Yeah. It's just a thrill, which is what music should be. It really is. And I often venture into sounding a little kumbaya. Not when it comes to the business of music, I'm not kumbaya at all. But when it comes to the feelings that music inspires, picture me around the campfire, okay? Holding hands with everybody.
Absolutely. Yes.
No, I think that you're kind of, that makes you an absolutely perfect guest in a multitude of ways. But I think, you know, it's always wonderful when we have someone with a deep knowledge and then also like a passion for this flawed institution, you know, like with clear eyes about what it is, what it means, but kind of a vision for what it could be. That is a real, that's a treat. It's making me very happy.
Well, I'm glad, Kristen. And again, I'm happy to be here. I'm thrilled to be on the nominating committee. I think it's safe to say that these are some of the most music loving, people in the world, whatever capacity, whoever they are, whatever they do behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, whatever they do, it's a music loving group of folks.
So before you were on the nominating committee, was there someone or like an artist or a, you know, an artist or a group or something that you were just like, if I ever get the opportunity, you know, like this is my case, like this is my snub. This is the person that I, you know, feel so strongly has been overlooked all these years. Is there someone that like has... Or a group of people, like we have our list of people, our snubs that, you know, we keep thinking about.
I have like 10,000. So
yeah,
that's
sure.
Like my list is like everyone. I probably shouldn't say just because of where I'm sitting right now. But suffice it to say, I haven't had like a written list. I didn't have that. I think it just shows up in my work. Shows up in my work over the years. Sometimes those are the stories that inspire me the most. The people that do the best work and are the least credited. The people who get a lot of credit, but not the credit that is actually commensurate with their impact on rock or pop or soul or whatever the case may be. I never had like a thought of being on this committee. Not one single solitary thought of it at all. Like at all. And the folks that I've told are like, girl, I thought you were already on it.
I was going to say the idea that you hadn't been approached before or that, yeah.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. And again, when you work at Billboard, and again, I say I've worked there twice in leadership positions both times. And, you know, you get to know the grind behind the glamour. It's a trade magazine at the end of the day. So you get to know the grind behind the glamour. And I just didn't think it was going to happen. And it wasn't high on my list to try to low-key campaign for or write a letter and say, I just really feel I should be considered. Or yeah. And here's the thing. I've done stuff like that before for jobs or whatever the case. I'm not a known to be a person that sort of falls back and blends into the woodwork. But listen, I had not thought about it. Not an iota. Not an iota. When I got the call, I was like, yo, is this that call? I was like, oh my, what? Hello? Like, oh, like it's great. It makes me feel a little bit like they feel at the podium.
That's amazing.
Yep.
I'm glad it wasn't just, you know, another day, another, another call. Okay. That's good. That's good. That's the attitude people I think need to have, because this is the beginning of the yearly process is that meeting. And it, when we talk about how much it matters, that gravity to some degree needs to be there from the beginning. Because, you know, if it's not taken seriously and then, you know, the end result is like this huge thing. Yeah, that's the attitude.
Yes. Well, this is like Joe getting his ballot. You know, he did put on a campaign, I would say.
Our
show has been a low-key campaign. I think many times at the end you have mentioned, like, because people will be like, wow, you know so much about the Rock Hall. Joe, you should be a voter. He'd be like, you know, that's a really great point you make.
I definitely don't attach any negativity or shame to campaigning. As I've said, I've definitely wanted things, written letters. Occasionally I've been known to start my own whisper campaign. Like,
yeah, do what's things, necessary.
You do. That's the way this business works. Yes. You know, unfortunately, it's the way this business works. It's just that in this particular situation, I just had not set my cap for it at all.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Well, I think that's all great context for you and your position for the Rock Hall, about the Rock Hall, how you feel about it and where you are now. I would love to talk now a little about Sade. And I'll start just kind of asking about, I know you've written about Sade before. And I would love to just get started with what your kind of personal history is with Sade, maybe even if you remember the first time you heard the music of Sade.
I think the first album was 84.
That's correct. Yeah.
So I think I'm like 19, 18. It just hit me like between she and Luther Vandross, it just hit me like a sledgehammer, because I grew up in a Motown and Elvis household. Those are my mother's favorites. So those records, and obviously those records are for all time and remain some of my favorite records, but they were in fact my mother's records.
Right.
They were not my records. Mm-hmm. So Sade and Luther hit me, and then more particularly Sade, as much as I love Luther Vandross, is because she's a woman and because she's Black and because I thought she was fancy. I mean, like, what else do you need from your pop star when you're 18, 19 years old? Uh-huh. I thought she was so fancy with that accent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. And her, and I think being a musical star, a pop star, a soul star, there's so much style attached to being that, right? Her style's impeccable. It's impeccable right now. I don't know where she is.
Glamorous. She's just like, she feels very effortless. You know, we were just talking about kind of like effort or whatever, and kind of like how something about being like in, you know, music, being a musician, being a rock star, et cetera, means like kind of acting pretty cool. And it's just like, she She is the coolest, you know,
yes,
like
effortlessly.
She is effortless. She doesn't even like have a big, I don't know. It's like,
You never really see her sweat. You never see her try. And like, it's, yeah, it all just, she's the whole package.
Yeah.
She really is. I mean, and the consistency of it too. She knows her brand and she sticks to it.
Yes.
She's like, it's going to be this ponytail. So you guys just need to, it's going to be this ponytail and it's going to be this red lip. And we're going to be doing a lot of eyeliner. I don't care what decade of life I'm in. Like, this is what we're doing. Like, even if you think of somebody like from the Ronettes, Ronnie Spector. Mm-hmm. Ronnie was so attached to, like, you know, her style was so attached to who she was as an artist. You got the bouffant going. You got the eyeliner going and everything. But, you know, as we all get older, we all look different than we looked when we were in our 20s. Sade's like, I'm not even going to try hard. And I'm still going to be giving you that same energy. It's magnificent.
And, I'm not going to age somehow. Somehow I magically will not age.
What is that? And all the younger kids are going to love me. Oh, you're Drake. You're like the most popular rapper of all time. Sure. You got me tattooed on you. Cool, cool. It's like, you're doing mashups of my songs with yours. Oh, cool, cool. Definitely.
And you're like doing an homage to me in many of your songs, you know. I feel like that is
Well, let's talk a little bit about the I want to walk up to the recording career and talk a little bit about the kind of history of Sade the Woman and the band you know, before, you know, 84.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was born in Nigeria right before its independence from Britain. At the time went by Helen, which is a little hard to believe when she is Sade, period. But she did, you know,
also taught us how to say her name. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
That is a thing too. Mm-hmm. That like, that is not nothing to have a name that is, you know, not an obvious pronunciation, and to have to have a whole, you know,
world.
Oh yeah,
just a world saying your name. Yeah, that's also just
not to mention having the audacity to name a whole band after yourself when you're the only girl.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Points.
Pretty cool.
Like points, infinite points.
Her parents split when she was four. Her mom took her to England, and at first she was interested in designing clothes.
Was.
But then was pulled into the music scene, joined a group called Pride, which was kind of like a Latin funk group. And she and the guitarist slash sax player Stuart Matthewman, who is an important figure here, that they start a songwriting collaboration, and they start having their own sets within these shows as part of the band Pride. And then the labels, when they're checking out these shows, the eye is drawn to Sade, as anyone could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
When they want her, which I think this is cool, she brings Stuart along. She brings some of these guys from Pride along, including Paul Denman, the bassist, and a drummer named Paul Cook, who would be replaced within a year. Sade, I don't think, has ever really consistently had a drummer member. But they're signed as a band, not just, I mean, they're signed as Sade, which.
Well, and also just to like really make a quick point about, because you were like, oh yeah, she was going by Helen, but her middle name is Fola Sade.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sade
That's
is
an
just
abbreviation.
An abbreviation of her middle name. So it's not like out of nowhere. She was like, you know, it's a dramatic name.
No.
I've got a great idea, you know? Yeah. So it does kind of come from
yes.
somewhere as well. Just
yes.
So.
Thank you. That was about to be my next point,
over.
But yeah.
Oh,
and when you hear her talk, you know, I've seen interviews with her where and the way she says her full name is like one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard in my life.
It's just
the way it flows. But yes, Sade is an abbreviation of that, which she takes on as her professional name, but also the name of the group. And that's really how it's born.
Yeah. She was running in quite a creative crowd. You know, I feel like in the history of music, there's these great and historic scenes, you know, and she came out of that kind of real post Beatles Thatchery like scene where, I don't know if it was all the way to post punk, but if it wasn't, it was close to it. And I feel like people are, to name another UK band, we're kind of at loose ends. And she, you know, she just, I don't think there's that many people that, maybe there are, but this has kind of fallen into it. You know, I really think she kind of fell into it. I think she was a standout in any room that she walked into. She would have been a standout as a fashion designer. I mean, you can tell by her style. You know, you can picture the minimalist lines that she would have been gracing us with over all of these years. But I don't want to say right place, right time, but right place, right time for that band, without question.
Well, right. And just kind of a bit of a, I don't know, I mean, listening to and kind of reconnecting with their music in this past couple of days, I think it also just like a new thing in some ways, like very, so just like there, you mentioned, you know, oh, she didn't. And I'm sure we will continue on this as we talk about the music and stuff. But like, you know, she stayed consistent with her look, stayed consistent with the sound as well, because there was never, it wasn't just a, it wasn't like a fad. It wasn't a,
they weren't hopping on a trend.
They weren't hopping on a trend. Exactly. It was like,
I mean, I didn't mean to imply that.
I
don't think she was necessarily singing into her hairbrush as a kid. I don't know that, but that just from everything I've read and imagine, I just don't think that she was. I think she wanted to be somebody. I think she definitely wants. She talks, she has that great song, When Am I Gonna Make a Living, which is one of my favorite songs of hers. I mean, that song definitely got me from trying to figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life to at least kind of 60% figuring out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I think she's a very ambitious and creative woman, and she was going to figure it out however she was going to figure it out. I think she's also extremely hardworking and loyal, which I think is, as we're talking about with the band, I mean, no shots, but it's rare in the music business. Let's call it what it is. And there's a very, there's an interview I think she was doing with the broadcaster Donnie Simpson. And she talks about going on the road with them around Britain and being in this, you know, it's a classic thing of being in this van that's really raggedy and doing a show that, you know, isn't over until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and then having to be back on the, in the van and on the road at 5 o'clock in the morning to get to the next place, to get to the next place after that. And she pretty much says to Donnie Simpson, like, what else would I have done? Like, these are my guys. Like, we did this together. And, you know, she wanted to, quote unquote, as she says, and it's a favorite quote of mine, she says, we wanted to get success. We wanted to get success. And I think she was going to get success regardless of field. I do.
Yeah. And to your point about loyalty, and to reiterate, because we talked to a guest last week who did not realize that Sade was also a band, and that is who was being nominated. I just want to say, she's been with these guys since the beginning. The lineup changes have been minimal, and they only really occurred in the very, very beginning. But, you know, Paul S. Denman, Andrew Hale, Stuart Matthewman have been the band Sade with Sade since 82, since before the first release even came out. So
They're the guys in the van. Like, that's crazy. Guys in the van.
And I am sure she could have gone solo, as it were.
That's how they wanted to sign her.
Yeah.
And that is very specifically what the offer was.
And she could have changed her mind. She could have, you know, with great success, decided to branch out, leave them, but she did not. And they have continued to be the band. And I think that is worth pointing out. That's really remarkable in this business, especially.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some albums where I'm like, girl, we could try something though. Like, we could, like, there's so many gifted producers that want to get their hands on your voice, girl, that want to sit in a songwriting room with you. And, you know, let's shout out, like, heartbreaking shit, and, pardon me, and try to make
you're good.
A hit song, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Or a song that is going to, like, remain in people's hearts forever. Mm-hmm. Let's do that. And her response, clearly, each and every time is, sounds cool, but no.
Yeah, you got to respect right? it. You got to yeah. respect it. So we're going to take a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to get more into Sade, and we will review my patented categories that I have to evaluate an artist's hall worthiness. So we will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Pantheon podcast listeners, Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We hope you had a nice little break. We hope over your break, you
got yourself a little caffeine.
Well, pick me up. Yeah, you deserve it.
Yeah.
So here's some hall context for Sade. As the first album, Diamond Life, was 1984, that means Sade became eligible for the Rock Hall as of 2010. Never been on a ballot before. This is Sade's first appearance on the ballot. And as far as I could tell, no involvement with the hall, no appearances at any ceremonies, kind of par for the course for the group Sade. They kind of exist on their own terms. They're not exactly industry darlings in the sense that they're, you know, she or they are showing up a bunch. So no, there's no connection to the hall here. Sometimes we see that you can set yourself up for induction.
He wasn't out here inducting other people, appearing in a package or anything like that.
No, just got on. You can't. There's no chicanery here. Now, let's get to the categories. These are categories I devised, as our listeners know, as a way to evaluate artists. You know, the hall does not tell the voters what criteria to evaluate when voting. And I came up with a list of that I think somewhat reflect either worthiness or if we think the hall will go forward with induction. Not a perfect science, but I think these are the things you would want to consider. And let's start off with iconic / majorly recognizable songs. And I would like to go chronologically because that way we can kind of tell the story of Sade as we're going through the major singles. And obviously, I mean, this is obvious to me. I would think anyone off the street, you ask them, what is a song by Sade? They are probably going to say Smooth Operator.
Audacious debut. Audacious.
Crazy. That's out of the gate. Across genres and ages, everybody knows Smooth Operator. I mean, I feel like I knew Smooth Operator as a little boy because it was on one of those compilation CD commercials. So you got even just that snippet. But yeah, I mean, released in 1984 off that first album, Diamond Life, that was the breakthrough single. Peaked at number 5 on the Hot 100 and was a number 1 adult contemporary hit, written by Sade and a guy named Ray St. John, who had been in the band Pride but was not in the band Sade.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah, so it comes from the Pride era, but you know that guy did not either wasn't invited or wasn't interested.
Wherever he is, he's not hurting. He's
no, I mean he's set. He's set. He has a diamond life just from having publishing credit. Yeah.
Yes, and God bless him too, and God bless those whatever creative moment they were having. They hit that out the park, man.
I mean, I iconic and recognizable. It really hits both those marks, and it's great.
Did they use that song in a commercial for razors in the 90s? Did I make that up?
Oh, I don't recall that now.
It seems.
I'm like, it just feels like, I'm just like, did I make that up? Did I just think like, oh, I'm just trying to, I mean, obviously I remember it from when it came out originally, and I feel like it's a ubiquitous song, but I also feel like we are hitting this point. It's come up a few times in the past, in like some of our more recent episodes where
Gillette Fusion Pro Glide TV spot smooth operator.
Was it in the 90s?
That I don't know, but okay.
I feel like I remember it. Like, not that it wasn't like a ubiquitous song, but I also feel like it had just a little another blip in the 90s. Again, like a resurgence of just, you know, that was that time when they were using songs just like for everything had a, I don't know, that seems like just a very,
I can't confirm that the song's in there, but at the very least they are calling the product smooth operator, and whether or not they use the sound alike or
saxophone sound alike or something, I don't know. I had a vague recollection. Not to sully Sade's song with the Gillette commercial, but I do vaguely remember that.
Interesting. Yeah, and so that's out of the gate, and I would probably put that one as number one with a bullet. That's sure. Like if you don't even think you know Sade, you have heard Smooth Operator. Still gets played.
Yeah.
And you know that album Diamond Life that it's on, one of the biggest debuts of the 80s, went 4 times platinum.
Yes.
Smooth Operator stands tall among those songs as recognizable and iconic and known. But let's also give some love to Your Love Is King, which was the actual debut single. And while it didn't really do this same numbers in America, I think it is considered important to the canon of Sade.
Mm-hmm. I think it absolutely is. I don't know what better thing or what. For what I know, Sade is a straight girl, so I don't know what else you could say to a man besides, sir, your love is king. I mean, and it's something about her that I really like is that, well, she's already in. She doesn't, like you said, she has no interaction really with the Rock Hall, but she has been selected for induction into the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
That's right.
You have to show up to get your award, though. And, you know, Sade's not showing up. So she's not actually in it. She's just technically in it.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's just how rock and roll she is. Mm-hmm. She's like, thanks again, but like, sounds like a cool party, but I won't be there. It's the straightforwardness in her songwriting that I think is like deceptively simple. It's the detail. It's like the emotional detail, I should say. It's so bizarre. It's so bizarrely like in love to really feel, let alone write down and sing Your Love Is King.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, especially if you're like the cool girl, you know what I mean? Like, you're like the cool girl. You're the rock and roll star. You're like, there's not a lot of rebellion in that. Mm-mm. Or maybe there is, but it's so loving.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's weird, that I think it gave a whole generation of folks like permission to have like our own kind of romance, to give us a language of love. I'm queen of the puns today. Shout out to Everything But the Girl. Isn't that Everything But the Girl? I think it is. Yeah, it's just like she gave us a way to think about like relationships and a way to speak to our lovers. Like she was really and continues to be that girl. Like,
Yeah. We'll get to it too as we continue through this song list, but I'm just like, this is she's just like the most romantic songwriter. Just there's something very like, this is, you know, the quiet storm has arrived, you know, very, this is like, we are in an intimate moment. Sade is on, we are in an intimate moment. Like, that is, she made music to get busy to, and like, that is very apparent from the first, you know, horn blow.
Absolutely.
So we're all queen of the puns today. Then.
Yes, exactly. Welcome to the show. Yeah,
London royalty. London royalty.
Your puns are welcome here and celebrated, and answered, I'm sure, with plenty. So it's funny when we look at these artists, really from any era beyond just like it feels like a few decades ago, which is that like, man, artists just cranked out albums like year after year. The era of waiting years for, I mean, we'll get to Sade and the gaps, but like, you know, the next album was the next year. It was 1985. The album was called Promise. And that has the song, The Sweetest Taboo. You give me the sweetest taboo. Which that's up
again.
There.
Just this is we are talking. Shut the door. Turn down the lights.
Just light the candles.
Light the candles. Mm-hmm. Sade is in the building. Like,
yeah.
When she says, "Sometimes I think you're just too good for me." Come on.
Come on.
Also, I want to correct my pun. I think Everything But the Girl is actually Language of Life. Yeah, but not Language of Love. But yeah, like sometimes I think you're just too good for me. That used to have me rocked back like, and that is being the cool girl. Mm-hmm. That very much is being the cool girl.
Yeah.
Like you're too nice a guy for the way I'm about to act.
Yes. Oh, this is like, oof.
Yeah, it's rough, man. It's beautiful. And it's rough though.
The Sweetest Taboo is another one that went to number 5 on the Hot 100, and went to number 1 on the adult contemporary charts. I feel like you definitely still hear this one a lot. And the album Promise went to number 1, also went 4 times platinum, and they won the Grammy for Best New Artist, which, you know, sometimes the way the Grammys are set up, it's like you can have a second album out already and still win it because of the calendar or whatever. And then 1988 was the third album, Stronger Than Pride. And even though this album went to number 7 and went 3 times platinum, I wouldn't say any of these songs are quite as widely known as like Smooth Operator or Sweetest Taboo. But if there's one on here, I would say it's got to be Paradise.
I would agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm. Paradise to me is like, that might be my favorite Sade song. It's got the, I don't know, it's got the drums. I like the, you know, I think it's just got such a like good vibe to it. I don't know, I'm into it.
I agree with you. I think it's got that, it's a rare danceable Sade record.
Yeah,
comes up in a lot of DJ sets. Yeah, obviously you can slow dance to her for eternity. Mm-hmm. But but it's the rare sort of two-stepping.
Yeah, it's got line bling. It's like, you know, it has that kind of like, yes, the two-stepping kind of like you can get out on the dance floor to it, you know. Yes.
It's a great record.
I like that song a lot.
I like Your Love Is Stronger Than Pride, but it doesn't have the weight of Paradise in her catalog. I still really, really love you. Love is stronger than pride. And I agree with you that this album doesn't have, even as you say, as well as it did. But this is also another time, I do think too, that people were, as much as she was a radio artist and continues to be, people listened to the album.
Mm-hmm. yeah, as a whole, as its own statement.
Again, yes. You yes. just put that on. Don't worry yeah. about it. There's not going to be a skit in the middle or some kind of, you know, like a change that's going to, you know,
jar you. Yeah.
It's yeah. not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So like, I think that's another thing. That's points for her in the consistency, which is like, you can play that whole album and you know it's going to stay in mm-hmm. that pocket of what mm-hmm. you're looking for from a Sade album. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, Paradise went, it's her first and only number one R&B hit, which is surprising that, mm-hmm. that's the one. Also went to number 16 on the Hot 100, number 3 on the Adult Contemporary. And then the fourth studio album came in 1992. So now we're starting to get the gaps in between the albums. Love Deluxe was that one. And that has one of the biggest Sade songs. I would maybe put that right below Smooth Operator, which is No Ordinary Love.
There's a lot on here, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot on here. But yeah, No Ordinary Love is like, I guess, the most popular, literally. It's good.
Yeah, you know, it went to number 28 on the Hot 100, which I expected it to be bigger just because it's thinking of it retrospectively, you think like this is, man, that must have shot to the top of the charts. But it, because it is so iconic, it is.
Instead, it just quietly crept in the room.
Sade like, style.
Approached up, to, you know, crawled up, slinked up the charts.
It is number 459 on the recent Rolling Stone 500 greatest songs list.
Yeah. And so it made it no made, game, no game. Okay.
Yeah. And won a Grammy for best R&B performance by a duo or group. And so this one's got some accolades on it. I mean, and yeah, this is one I feel like you will hear it if you're not even seeking it out. Like it's one of those songs that just gets played a lot.
It does. I also think this was it's probably her most iconic to me album cover. It just when she had her hair down, which was like, oh my God, at the time. She has her hair down. Oh my God, it's not that big deal. We just were like thrilled about that. I remember she looks like she could be nude. Mm-hmm. That was like low-key a scandal and just really had us like up in arms in the best way. It just, yeah, yeah. And Cherish the Day also to me from that album.
Cherish the day, I won't go astray. I won't be afraid. You won't catch me running.
And that one also had Kiss of Life. You know,
yeah.
You gave me the kiss of life.
Another one that I just remembered these songs, like they just feel ubiquitous. They feel like they always existed, I guess. I don't know that I've ever like, you know, just, I feel like you don't have to seek out Sade. You can, but Sade will find you.
She will.
Uh-huh.
She will. There's so much good stuff here. The way she's, you know, I feel like mermaid stuff comes up in her work often, either in video or as this song that's on this album. Bulletproof Soul is a great, great record and just a great thought and a great bit of songwriting and song titling.
It's not that complicated, but you're gonna need a bulletproof soul.
This is good.
Yeah, and this album went to number 3, another one that went 4 times platinum. And it was after that Sade had their first major sabbatical, which at this point would almost start to like define them. Like, mm-hmm. where did Sade go? Yes. Suddenly Sade is back. You hear rumors that they're working on something and then they come back with mm-hmm. an album, which, you know, they didn't come back until 2000 with Lovers Rock was the album, which is, you know, when we talk about consistency in the sound, this album, you know, was a departure to some degree. You know, it's more sparse, You don't have any saxophone, really. There's a lot of acoustic guitar in this one. And, you know, so they are capable of, you know, going down different avenues sonically.
Definitely. And I feel like mood wise also, the songwriting and the energy of the energy of the songs, not on the fun side of love on this album.
Sure.
Somebody already broke my heart.
Somebody already broke my heart.
It's like, yo, pull that out when you just, you know, kicked your person out, or your person just kicked you out of their life. Like, man, listen, even it's only love to get you through. Like, I just feel as folks say, she was feeling some type of way when she was writing these, when she was writing these songs. They're King of Sorrow.
I am the King of Sorrow. King of Sorrow.
Phenomenal. Phenomenal record. And she like, you begin to see these things, like I said, that show up in her work. She, you know, the idea of king, you know, she, that was what, on her first or second album. And then she has The Sweetest Gift when she had The Sweetest Taboo. Like, these things are like recurring. And I think she has An Immigrant, where she had When Am I Going to Make a Living? Like, she has these recurring themes that you begin to see. And I think that's also important as you think about the kinds of artists that go into something like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who get lifetime achievement awards of any kind. You can, if you look, or you can feel like a narrative, you get to know them over the course of their career. They're not, even though it may sound similar, that's their style, it's not like the same old thing, like they're growing, or there's a valley, or there's a high, you know what I mean? It's not just like, just straight across bland. Like, there's a story to what Sade has been doing over the last, what has to be, what are, is this her 40th year in the business?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So she's been telling a story in detail about love and life for 40 years. And I feel like, especially as you talk about these gaps in between the albums, I begin to think that she's telling the story of her decade. Like, even if it's not our decade, like whatever 8-9 year thing that's been going on with her, like, she's telling the story of that. And it's fascinating, honestly, to listen to her albums in order, because you hear it, and it's magical.
Yeah. I mean, and after this one would be a 10-year break, you know, and that in the Lover's Rock was, again, successful. This is a pattern, you know, it went to number three, went 3 times platinum. But then Soldier of Love was 2010. Now, I will say, normally with a group from the 80s, when we do this very show, we tend not to cover the albums this deep into the career. And I'm not shading anyone specifically, but that's typical. And that is honestly no shade to any artist from the 80s. When they get to the 2010s, they're not making kind of work that is part of the canon anymore. Really, it's maybe the fans will buy it, but nobody's really talking about it. But Sade, this is different, has not dropped off. And this is considered to be like a major comeback, worth the wait, top shelf Sade record.
Are you kidding me? This is what I talk about when I say she tells the story of her decade.
Yeah.
She's literally telling you, I'm literally a soldier of love. Like, I've been out here battling, like, for you guys for, at this time, at what, 30 years when she did this?
Yeah.
It's like, if you can call anybody a soldier of love, it's Sade, I do. Like, what? Like, she's telling her story. She's telling, like, I remember when this came out, she's a little bit older than me. I'm like, she's definitely telling my story. But you could also say that if you're 29, you just broke up with somebody. Like, it's the soldier of love thing. And that, is it the drum beat, the snare? What is it?
It's like,
talk to me. It's like we're marching in the military parade.
Well, yes. This I thought of as like a, that's a departure. That's like a sound, a sonic departure in some mm-hmm. way, you know, like that song is the least kind of the, you
We're
know,
talking the title track. Yeah.
Yeah. The title yeah. track. You could play any of the Sade songs that we have kind of mentioned earlier at a wedding,
yes.
You know, until we really get to Soldier of Love, where you're kind of like, okay, she's got like, it's just a different tone. That is a different, she, this to me felt like very, a different, you
yes.
know.
Yes. Different. It's a memoir in song form. It's mm-hmm. definitely, I feel like a lot of her work, and again, whoever talks to Sade to know, but, I feel like a lot of her songs are very that. I mean, some people's songs are, some people's songs aren't in the terms of who's in the Rock Hall and who isn't. But there's something, especially for an artist that makes herself so scarce. It just helps you feel like you know her when you hear songs like this. Mm-hmm. If it's not personal, it's very much in line with her persona, which is one of the strongest and most enduring personas, I think, in the history of recorded music. And I don't say that kind of thing lightly. I don't, but I think it is. She is that lady.
Yeah. I mean, it is remarkable the level she's still working at. It's rare. You don't see it among the best artists of all time. And you know, this, and it resonated with people. You know, this album debuted at number one and stayed there for 3 weeks, went platinum within a month. And you know, even though Soldier of Love, the title track, you know, went to like 52 on the Hot 100, which, you know, isn't huge, but that's their biggest song on that list since No Ordinary Love.
Ooh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
And I love all these stats, man. Like, what? When I used to work at ESPN, we had this department called Stats and Info. And so we would really call them the Context Club. Like, if you want to put somebody in context, just call Stats and Info. And you're really teaching me a lot today. I appreciate it, Joe. I did not realize some of this. And it just makes her, to me, just all the greater. Like, it's insane to me how powerful she's been for as long as she's been. And it makes me sad, actually, that we won't be able to see, say, an artist like Whitney Houston when she's at this point in her career, that we won't be able to see an artist like Prince at this point in his, because they're all from that same era.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a little bit, I mean, it's getting to be a smaller and smaller group. And really, they're all too young for that, for the group to be as small as it's dwindled to. It's wonderful that she's here. And I feel like some part of it is, and I've written about this, is that she takes those breaks.
Mm-hmm.
She takes those breaks. She's not touring all the time. She's not on red carpet all the time. She's not in the studio all the time. Mm-hmm. Wherever she is, in her little Sade palace in the sky, I don't know where she is. But one imagines her taking the time to relax. Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe hanging out with family and friends. Hey, maybe still having the cigarette that she probably should have stopped smoking a long time ago. I don't know what she's doing.
Keep the voice husky.
Right?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Rest is important, and I believe that she does it. And she definitely has her struggles, which have been long alluded to, but again, her life is so secretive. But she seems to be managing it.
Yeah, and like you said, we don't know exactly what's. I mean, they claim that they're working on a new album, but they take their time. So, you know, we don't have any idea of when that might come out. But that was Soldier of Love was the last album. They've done some one-off songs for movies. They did one for Wrinkle in Time and one for Widows in 2018. But that's where we leave off with Sade. Now we've talked about the songs. As we've talked about that, we've talked about the albums, which is the next category, albums that are considered all-time classics. And to kind of kick us off here, I'm going to pose the question, do you think any Sade albums are on Rolling Stone's list of 500 greatest albums?
Okay.
This is the guessing game that we do each episode.
Yeah. Well, you already did the song one. You said the song. What is number 494?
No Ordinary Love.
No Ordinary Love. Yeah. Are there any other Sade songs on the song?
I believe that's the only entry.
Is it a song list or album list we're talking about?
So now we're talking. We're talking about the album list. Yeah.
I would think that it would be. My first choice would be they might have Diamond Life.
Diamond Life is
the debut. Promise, but I would think Diamond Life.
Okay.
I would. They love to put, if they're going to put something, they love to make it the debut generally, or like the breakthrough, album.
Well, Kristen, so you're teaching me stuff too. I did not really know that about that list.
Well, that's just like what has happened. Like
what we've noticed. Then it makes sense. It's like, if it's the debut, it's the introduction of the band. It's like, yeah. It can be a more seismic shift in the culture when it's like you go from not having the artist to having the artist. We found that as a trend. It's not always the case, but
it's not. Yeah. It's not prescriptive, but that is the trend. Mm-hmm. But I do wonder, now this might be one of those cases where it's the opposite, where I don't know. I'm like, if they have one on it, I think it's Diamond Life. Mm-hmm. And if it's on one of the lists, there's two lists. There's like the early 2000s list, and then there's the 2020, there's like 2003, 2012 are very similar lists.
It's basically the same list, yeah.
Major change in 2020, that kind of like was a much more kind of like diverse and inclusive like mm-hmm. list that they kind of made a big, they like just redid the list in 2020.
It didn't feel as classically Rolling Stone the way the 03 list did.
Okay.
But,
that's the one everybody was just like arguing about and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm, that's why they did it. That's why you do those lists.
I'm not hating on it as a magazine editor. I'm not hating on it at all.
No. All right. They can only put, Jim Morrison on the cover so many times. They got to do something to get eyeballs, whatever. I think, though, but then you were saying that it was 494 on the 2003 list, Joe, was
No. That was on the more recent list. No Ordinary Love was 459 on the most recent Rolling Stone 500 songs list. And that is from the album Love Deluxe from 92.
I'm going to say Diamond Life could be on the 2020 list. But if it is, I think it's in the mid 400s. I think it's like 451.
Okay. Just for the fun of it, Danielle, do you want to throw out a number that you think if Diamond Life is on there?
I'm going to give it like 300 to 325.
Okay. Diamond Life is on there.
Is it like number 12 or something insane? Like I missed
200.
Okay.
Diamond Life is on there at 200.
Okay.
And
go on.
Love Deluxe is at 247.
Oh
no. I love this show. Why haven't you guys invited me on this show before? This is like a game show. Like, why can't I come to this every day?
And
this
so she's got two. They've got two in the top half.
Okay. That's right. So that bodes well for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
That's great. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an interesting ballot. I mean, it's going to be an interesting count.
Yeah. No, totally. It is. Well, and I mean, I know that that's like kind of where we're headed in a minute, but I'm like... I'm thinking, interesting.
Yeah. So, and doing that exercise with the Rolling Stone list helps us to bridge the album category with the critical acclaim category, because, if you do well on that list, it seemingly is indicative that the critics are responding to your work. Mm. And it's interesting because you can kind of put this into the different categories of contemporary criticism and retrospective criticism, as you can with any artist who has a legacy at this point. Mm-hmm. I would say doing my research, I found that the contemporary criticism, the criticism at the time these albums were coming out, especially the initial ones, it was at times kind and at times kind of rough. And I think a lot of the white male critics of the 80s didn't really get it. Sometimes we look at Robert Christgau as, the self-proclaimed dean of rock critics to get an idea of like, he also catalogs his criticism on his website really searchably well. He gives them mostly Bs, criticizes her range and calls them aural wallpaper.
Sweet.
And here's another quote. He says, "I'm unable to find fault with her more memorable songs. Keep falling asleep before I finished the sentence."
You need somebody to keep you company, Robert. That's what you need.
Put on more about you, buddy.
Put on a Sade album. alone and fall asleep, that's on you, my friend. You need to have a little somebody in there to keep you awake. Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel, if I remember the writing of the time, the criticism was a lot about her being samey. I thought also so often she was relegated to being like a mood rather than like a more true artist. I will say
though, she is a mood.
It should be exclusive.
She
you know, that's the thing.
Is also a mood.
I don't think. Yeah, but like a mood like that. Mm-hmm. She wasn't as deep. You know what I mean? And I found fault with that criticism. But I do think at that time, in the 80s, it was really like a huge time for Black pop. Period.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I think critics, radio jocks, a lot of people just kind of hated it for whatever reason they could make up to hate it. You were a sellout. You were sounding white. You weren't being true to yourself. I think there was this thing coming out of the 70s and going to the 80s where, you know, if you weren't sounding like, you know, Wilson Pickett or Tina Turner, and I'm talking about Tina Turner in the 70s mm-hmm. or the 60s, then you weren't like real. Or you weren't as, you know what I mean, as deep, or you didn't have as much soul. And
Ridley,
so I think that's where some of those criticisms came from.
Yeah.
But
like,
again,
this was so smooth.
Yes, but she was ours. Mm-hmm. She was not meant for the ears of people who grew up. Like I grew up listening to Motown and Elvis as a kid. Mm-hmm. But if you grew up going to high school and college dances to that music, to like the kind of soul that was the great and award-winning and soul-stirring soul of those eras, or even the disco sometimes, then you're going to listen to Sade and say, what is she giving? Like, what are we doing? Like, what are all those sax solos? Why are we not coming from the gospel tradition that R&B comes from? Like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of that criticism came from. I myself, that I can recall, and I can recall most of the record reviews I've done, I don't think I would ever have said anything like that, because she so touched my soul and my friends' souls. Like, we were rocked to our core. Like, what is the video of her on the horse? I can't even remember what it's called.
Yes. I think of that one too. That is the visual. Like, yes. I just, yeah.
He's in a white shirt.
Uh-huh, flowing.
Yes, I know this. I know this visual as well. Well, you know, and I think there was the 80s were a smoothing out of a lot of things, you know, it was a lot of just the smoothing out of like vocals and things like that. It was happening. There is something to be said for someone who can sound so effortless. And I think, you know, very like grounded in her voice mm-hmm. rather than there's nothing really performative about Sade. It's an ease that maybe was like people were like, they wanted to feel more effort or something. I don't know. I'm like, to me, if you can, you know, you mentioned like Luther Vandross at the beginning, it's like, that's what I'm talking about. Like 80s, like R&B soul music that was like very smooth and kind of just like, you know, caresses you rather than like, I don't know, slaps you in the face, like is a different, I don't know. I think she's like very emblematic of that.
Yeah, I mean, those artists of the 80s, you know, Whitney obviously came out of the gospel tradition, but made the decision she made to sound the way she sounded. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the artists of that era didn't necessarily. I mean, Lionel Richie also came out of the gospel tradition, but like Michael Jackson did not come out of the gospel tradition. Prince did not come out of the gospel tradition. Sade did not come out of the gospel tradition. Like, and I think that it was just a real lurch in the culture. And those artists did not want to sound like the artists that came before them. They just didn't. And why would they? They were new. They were the kids of those people. If you're making your mom's music, are you even going to be successful with the kids that actually buy music back then anyway? Like, don't rent it, but like actually have to get in a car or a bus and go to the record store and look around and talk to the weird person behind the counter to know if the album is out or whatever. And then you take it home and it's yours. Do you want it to sound like your mom's music? No, you want to irritate the hell out of your mother, don't you? Or
that's
dad
rock,
or whatever.
That's rock and roll. That's one of the definitions of rock and roll, I would say.
It is. So I don't, that's why I take those criticisms with 10,000 grains of salt, as I take the criticisms of early Whitney Houston, early Mariah, not so much Prince because he got a guitar and guys like that, rock critics like that.
Yes, it is.
But, you know, Lionel Richie leaving the Commodores, Diana Ross leaving the Supremes. It's like those artists, they were so successful, but they were the whipping children of the critics at that time.
Yeah. And, you know, we take that into consideration because there's a lot of those types of critics who are still voters for the Rock Hall. But also, you know, times change. And, you know, I want to point out that retrospective criticism has been much, much kinder, especially as we've heard from different types of voices in music criticism. And I think that's as evidenced by their placement in this 500 albums list that they've got two on there. And I think there's just a ton of respect that they never really lost it. You know, that each release has been good. It's like kind of impossible.
Longevity is their friend in this case. Sometimes, you know, just like to be able to have, you know, two comebacks, you know,
to every release be a comeback. At a certain point, pretty cool. But we'll get the longevity in a second. We don't have to talk about the next category, commercial success, too much, because it's just, you know, I'll be the stats guy again. Never released an album that wasn't at least platinum. If we go through them, it's four times, three times, and then even the one in 2010, when it becomes more difficult to sell a platinum album, that one went platinum, and then their best of went four times platinum. 60 plus million records worldwide. Wow. Some sources say as much as 75 million plus.
And I got the box set too, which is beautiful, the vinyl box set. I heard that did really well as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's undeniable. Like, you look at the numbers, and the numbers are all there. Didn't ever release an album that wasn't platinum.
It's crazy.
Minimum.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Now we can go to longevity, which is, you know, if we talk about, like, when is that initial phase of them being on top before the pauses, it's 84 to 93, you know, about 10 years, which is very impressive. But truly the real magic is that they go away and then they come back in 2000, 2010, and they're still relevant. And that is like true longevity in the most impressive way.
Is another way to say longevity is timelessness, which is, right? It's like, to me, that's something else that helps you in these achievement awards. It's just like, it's timeless. You can really throw on Smooth Operator right now. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's just... It's giving you what you need and more than, really. So these songs really do have a timeless quality. And again, it's just rare.
Yeah. I think they have both types of longevity. You know, they have the timelessness of the sound, but also literally it wasn't like they put out a few albums, then faded into obscurity. Like they continued to be around and put out work and have a catalog in addition to the music, not going away. You know, they didn't go away and the music also didn't go away. So they have both in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about influence, which is a big one. You know, I feel like they're considered to be at the forefront of a few genres that, you know, can be described in a lot of different ways, whether you're talking about neo soul, like we said, Quiet Storm. I've seen the phrase sophistopop as one that they're, you know.
Okay.
I think you can see it in the R&B singers who came after them, especially the women. But, you know, they are interesting fans of Sade across all genres. We look at someone on the ballot. Rakim cites her as an influence. Mm-hmm. Big Boy is a huge fan. So is Rick Ross and Kanye. People you wouldn't expect. Weirdly, the Deftones
Oh,
from now the
that's
rock
one.
Band
I was
from
like,
the 90s?
I'm like Rick Ross and Kanye. I could see that. I'm like, you know, with the Shaka and the all
sure,
that.
Sure, but the Deftones have covered No Ordinary Love. How weird is that? I mean, and then, you know, less surprising, you know, covers have come from Lauryn Hill and Frank mm-hmm. Ocean. Beyonce has name checked her as so has Taylor Swift. If we want to pick the two most famous mm-hmm. people right now, it's across the board.
I think she's such an example of as we've talked about consistency and also just like doing what one wants to do when one wants to do it. I think especially with songwriters like Taylor and Beyonce, it's like she would inspire anybody. I mean, in some ways, I feel inspired by her just in my actual writing to say what I mean, especially when it's about emotional things. You know, it's just not the easiest. And I think, you know, I don't think women songwriters of any race get the credit that they're due. And I think sometimes it's because of this emotional intelligence that gets taken for granted because that person is a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fair and it's not true. It takes a lot of work to talk about what love really might feel like, what happiness really might feel like, what heartbreak really might feel like. This is a difficult task. Hey, can you just go in a room and just tell me what heartbreak just really feels like? And I need like 5 stanzas and a hook.
Yeah, real quick.
Like these things are hard things to do. And so I think that's also why rappers respect her so much. As so many rappers will say, because her pen game is strong. She says what she means. And so that's why I think that she's inspirational as much for her work ethic and her creativity as for her sound, I think, for a lot of people and her consistency.
Yeah, absolutely. This next category almost is like it's a Hail Mary if someone isn't doing well in the other categories. But like it's artistry / skill, which we have talked about. That has been the current throughout this whole conversation. But, one thing I do want to say, you know, we've been talking about obviously Sade is a great singer and she's a great songwriter, but also props to those other guys who are great players. And they are also great songwriters as well. They have credits on all these songs.
On all these songs. Yeah, they do. They do. And I think that people do forget in the way that they forget that Sade is a band.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a rare case where the guys do get forgotten in her band.
Mm-hmm.
They have purposefully, I believe, maintain anonymity. They have maintained this. I don't know what these folks must have been like in their 20s when they got together. Like what attracted them to each other creatively. But some of it must have been, I want to be secure. I want to have money. I want to get my creative Jones off. But the whole fame thing, we don't get down like that. Or I can feel from you that that's not really what you're in it for. Mm-hmm. Because how do they all feel that way? Or all, I guess, even if they wanted something different, don't. Like they don't seem to be arguing over it. I think the guys from Sade put out a record, or was it called Sweetwater? Or there was like a moment where they did something on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quietly as it was kept, man. That was came and went.
Sweetback.
Sweet, what is it?
Sweetback.
Sweetback.
Yes.
And like they're just so consistent with that. It's when you think about what attracts a group of people to meet, talk, hang out, sit in writing rooms together, play instruments together, go on the road together, and then just be this consistent over 40 years. I'm trying to think of another example.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the artistry is apparent, and yeah, whatever bond they have is magical and maybe best that we don't think about it too much because we don't want to jinx it.
We do not. But I'm feeling like the documentary might be boring, man. You know what I mean? Like, what are we doing? What are we talking about?
They're professionals who get along. And... Yeah.
It's not going to be the Metallica doc. Like, you know what I mean?
Low drama. Yeah.
They're not going to therapy together.
No.
the final category, maybe the most important category, because it speaks to ubiquity, which often is a large indicator of if someone is going to get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is, does my mom know who they are? And for, I know for me, the answer is yes, but I'm pretty sure she did not know they were a band, for whatever that's worth. Like, she knew of Sade the artist, but I don't think she knew that they were a group of people.
Yeah. In front of your mom? I don't think anybody knows that but us, right?
Yeah, honestly. I'm like...
I mean, we just talked...
Pinfield didn't know. Like,
Last week, we were talking to Matt Pinfield, who's like, well, you know, is a savant. He has like a ton of music knowledge, and he had no idea. So like, we really can't... fault my mom.
And I think that's purposeful, too.
Yeah. No, my mom, of course, knows who Sade is. I'm sure she does not know that they are a band, but, you know, I don't think that... I don't think that counts against them at all. You know, it's more like an extra fact, an interesting fact.
It is.
Yeah.
If they get in, people watching are going to be like, who are those people? Who are those people with her?
Yeah, totally.
Who are those people?
Let's talk about that. Let's get to our verdict. Should Sade be in the Hall of Fame? Will she get in and will it be this year? And Kristen, why don't you start us off?
Well, you know, I think that every time we finish an episode, I'm like, I'm sold. This is, they got to get in.
Spent an hour and change getting hyped up and remembering. And yeah, of course.
And I truly believe in an expansive hall, and I believe there's room for everybody. And I think they're obviously a worthy artist. So yes, I think they should get in. And also it's just like, you can't talk about this band for an hour and change and think like, nah.
I don't know.
You know, no, I really do believe, of course, that they should get in. Will they get in is a harder question. It's more down to the things that we were just talking about, which is that they, you know, you were saying that they didn't show up to the Songwriters Hall of Fame. And so now, so they haven't, you know, received that accolade technically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that is something I don't know necessarily how much the voters care about that stuff, but if they're not out there shaking hands, playing the game when Lenny Kravitz is, like, then that's going to be a harder sell for them. Also, they were kind of a surprise nominee this year, I would say, for us. I've seen many people in Los Angeles wearing Sade t-shirts in the past month. I don't know. There's something in the air. I think that they are popular. I think they're having a moment in a way, but I don't know if it's going to be enough to get them in this year. I would be very surprised. I'd put them toward the bottom of the likelihood of the likelies, unfortunately, this year in particular. Who knows, you know, what we have in the future. So I think eventually they'll get in. I mean, I hope so. It also is going to take people on the non-com to continue to nominate them if they don't get in this year. It's going to take a consistent effort to continue to get their to keep their name out there. The other thing I will say is it will hurt them if people don't think they'll show up. It's just hard sometimes. I think like the Kate Bush, in many years past, it was like, she won't come. So, you know, I think that if there was a year that she was going to come, it was last year and she didn't, obviously. So I wonder if like, maybe people think they don't care, they don't need it. I'm not sure. So I think 10 years from now, will they be in? I hope so. But I think that they're on the outside of the bubble this year.
Okay. Danielle, what do you think? Should they? I mean, you don't even really have to. We've covered that already. But, you know, will they? And do you think it'll be this year?
I am so happy that I'm going to defer to my position on the nominated committee and not put my opinion out there.
Just abstain.
I am. I'm abstaining.
Fair enough.
But they should be.
Yes. Here's what I think. And I want to say before I say anything that I will be voting for Sade on my ballot this year.
Ooh, okay.
Sade will absolutely.
Look at you.
That's another thing. We call up people. We call up voters, and you know, you can choose to share your ballot with us. There's no, you know, this isn't like a real like a federal election where you know you're not allowed to share your ballot with anyone. But this is very much a so we call people every year, and we have them. Some people live vote. We've like convinced people to vote for Dionne Warwick live on air before.
No rules against it, but we do like to.
And Joe will be sharing his ballot with us all, I'm sure.
Yes. But I am definitely voting for Sade. I'm very impressed by the, you know, all of it. Influence and longevity in particular are, I think, rare and special with them.
Yes.
I think this is a very competitive ballot.
Ooh, it's competitive.
It's extremely. And, you know, it's interesting, Kristen, what you were just saying about, like, you know, they I don't even think in Sade, they do have social media accounts. I don't believe they've acknowledged this with a post, at least. Whereas I just found out yesterday that Foreigner put together a four-year consideration video.
Oh, like, my God.
Which I've never seen
that
before.
Just, oh, thirsty, thirsty.
I've never seen that before.
Just, I have not seen this. I have not heard about it.
And it has like, you know, Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and Jack Black and Mark Ronson all just being like, come on, Hall, put them in.
They put together their own package, basically.
It's interesting, but it's so direct. And I've never seen something so direct that is like, Hall of Fame, please vote for us. You know, it's interesting. And Sade's not going to do that. I mean, no one's kind of going to do that. But the fact that, you know, we're seeing stuff like that, Sade's on the far end, I think, of, you know, they're not even like.
Well, they're going to look ever more pure, which I think voters like, though. Mm-hmm. I do feel like they still like that. Question for you. Is Journey in?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Journey, I think.
Yeah, no, we've reached the point where. We're running out of kind of the populist
70s.
I mean, you can do a Steve. That's my era, so I'm a Steve Perry fan. Like, there's, Foreigner.
Whew.
Yeah, I really do wish I could talk more about the ballot, but it's going to be interesting to see.
And
it's
so
very interesting to see.
It's when we look at the, you know, it is both hard and sometimes easy to predict who will get in. And there's always a surprise or two, which is great. Now that you can vote for seven artists for the first time, that could potentially change things. I get the sense that Sade is not as big of a name for the rock crowd as some of the other people in the artists on the ballot, excuse me. But also, you know, I think they're huge to the R&B crowd. If we're looking at the rock crowd and the R&B crowd, you know, so they could have a shot. If I had to bet, I would say it's probably not going to be this year, which is a shame. Mm-hmm. But I hope that it's soon. And I hope that I'm wrong too. And I'm going to be voting so that we can buck that trend. But you know, you especially look at some of the names. Like Sade is a huge name, but not as big a share, you know, and like there's certain kind of calculations you have to make about where you think this is going to go. I think they are now that you can vote for seven. I think we are going to induct seven. Sometimes they would only induct as many as five. But now that we've got more, there's more room for surprises. And so we don't know. Sadly, I'm going to say that I don't think it's happening this year, but I hope that I'm wrong. But let's not dwell on that. Let's pretend like Sade is getting in this year, and let's talk about what that could and should look like. Who should give the speech to induct Sade?
There's so many.
There really are. I mentioned a lot of them in the influence category. We also talked about how Drake has several Sade tattoos, and I know that would be huge for the Hall. They love when they can get somebody really famous to give that speech, and I think he's someone who could give a very personal. I mean, he's got the ink on his body; like, it obviously means a lot to him.
It does. I mean, Drake would be great, I think, but it would also be great to see somebody like an Erykah Badu, who doesn't come outside a lot herself.
Yes,
sure.
and who was like a direct descendant, like direct.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It would be great to see Erica Mwakshede in. I mean, those would probably be my choices, with Erica actually being ahead of Drake.
Mm-hmm.
I think Erica would be my number one choice. Erica was not looked upon as a home run. And she was. It's also an audacious debut.
Sure.
That's, I still return to that quite often.
I mean, it's a, the album is insanely great. I really think that Erica made probably a conscious decision that she wants to be the person that she is right now. But I think that there were a lot of us that thought, and maybe she in fact is, our Sade. Or the generation maybe a bit younger than me. Not even a full generation, but like the folks a bit younger than me. It's like, this is our Sade. She had a little bit more of a hip hop spirit. Erica's got a lot of, she's a bold ass sassy chick,
mm-hmm.
and a hell of a songwriter. Like, she also doesn't get credit for a lot of the song. When I think of See You Next Lifetime, I mean, that song by itself is just, and it's so out of the Sade playbook.
Yes.
In the best of ways, without biting, but clearly and deeply influenced by. Mm-hmm. So I would choose Badu in my second choice, would probably. And, you know, Jill could walk her in, but mm-hmm. Erica is the one, I think.
It's a good choice. Mm-hmm. And then if we want to think like the Hall, then uh-huh. her. They love. They,
yeah, I'm
you know,
like, who's the Hall gonna?
They love. You know, her has been at a few of the last few ones. Mm-hmm. You know, the Hall, it seems like the Hall and the industry are very invested in her. And then also, you know, Alicia Keys always it seems
Woo!
Like they've got Alicia's number at the Hall, and you know she's good. She's really good at giving a speech.
Alicia,
the, what she's
she is
done
Alicia
it.
Now. See, Alicia's up there.
Yeah, and you know, she has performed with Sade. I found that at Alicia Keys' Black Ball event, they did Stronger Than Pride together. So I found evidence of their collaboration and potential friendship.
I still really, really love you. Love is stronger than pride.
See, she's right there with Erica now that I'm thinking about it, now that you say that, because when I think of, like, You Don't Know My Name. About that again, it's not a bite, it's not a copying, it's just clearly and deeply influenced by.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's some songs from Alicia that go more in the Clive Davis, Whitney Houston category.
Absolutely.
But when I think about those songs, and those are like from the first, second album with Alicia, Alicia was so young, everybody forgets how young Alicia Keys was. On her debut, I don't know if she was 16, 17, 18 years old, something like that. And that's when you're really like still super influenced. You're coming into yourself
mm-hmm.
as an artist. And man, listen, okay, so now it's three. It's Erica, it's Alicia, and it's Drake.
Yeah. And any of those would be good.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, do you think Sade would go to the ceremony and perform? I know we were talking about they didn't show up at the Songwriters Hall of Fame. And I know the Hall would do everything they could to get them there.
Mm-hmm.
Do we think it could happen? One, and then I guess if so, what would the kind of three song set be?
Okay, so first of all, if they show up, and I think they would.
Okay.
And I think and I wish she could just get, you know. Well, let me shut up. But I think they would show up.
Okay.
And I think she would do two hits and whatever's her favorite.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I mean, if we were to make kind of a populist list, mm-hmm. I think it would be Smooth Operator, Sweetest Taboo, and No Ordinary Love.
Paradise.
First of all,
You gotta get the
that trio is about to make me cry. Seriously,
it'd be an affecting set list for sure. I could also see them throwing "Soldier of Love" almost as a tip of the hat to like, hey, we still write and make great music. Like, it's not just kind of 80s and 90s, but
and they could just walk out to those drums,
march,
and we know,
yeah.
We know. It would be like, and if you don't know, then maybe you don't need to know. But if those drums are so distinctive on that record, it's like, whoo, they could just walk out to that and the screams would be loud.
Yes.
Totally. You know, I hope it happens. And I hope that if and when they get inducted, that they do show up and perform, because I think that would be really cool. And it would be a moment, because like we say, they're not showing up to everything, so it would be special.
It really would be.
Yes,
it would. It would break the internet.
It might. It might just. And would. Yeah. And wouldn't the hall love that?
Oh yeah. Yes, indeed.
All right.
I thought the last show was so great too.
Yeah, we were there. We went.
I was not, so it was really great in person too. Then.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. I mean, like they gave us wristbands at the beginning of the show, and we didn't fully know what was going to happen, and then we found out it was going to be part of the Missy performance, and then
yeah, it was so cool.
It was blowing up, and it was the Missy performance in particular was like got us on our feet, like screaming.
Yeah,
it was a great show.
Yeah.
It was a great show watching it from home. It's just a great show. And I'm also a huge Spinners and New Edition fan. So I was having a moment.
That was a blast.
Perfect. Yeah. It was really, really great.
That was a perfect, like,
right?
Yeah, very good. And they did it. They showed up. They had the choreo. They showed up. I was very pleased. It was great.
Outfits?
Yeah.
The outfits were flawless.
Yes, yeah, it was very good. Yeah. No, agree.
If Sade got in, would you go to the ceremony? I mean, I feel like.
Would you travel to Cleveland? That's the other question is Sade going to go cross the ocean to come to Cleveland? This is always the question. When it's in Cleveland, you got to ask yourself.
Okay, this is the thing for me. Being from Oakland, California, I feel a little brotherly love with Cleveland, Ohio. Like, it's so disrespectful. Like, for people to say, well, I don't know, because it's in Oakland. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm like,
Oakland is cool, though.
I've been to Cleveland one time, two times. I think once for a game and once for a concert. And it's a great town.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Last time it was so fun. I mean, like, we will be there.
And I will say, you know,
I'm getting married 2 weeks probably before the ceremony, and I'm still probably
congratulations.
Wait. Thank you, but I'm probably going
to the happy couple.
Thank you, but I'm like, it's going to be, you know, I wonder if we're going to postpone our honeymoon or something so we can go to this stupid, so that I can go. I don't know if Ross will go.
I don't think it's stupid, at all. The only reason I didn't go this year is because I couldn't get it together and I had deadline from hell and I needed to sit tight and finish what I was doing. But I think it will probably be on my calendar, especially for as long as I'm on the committee.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I feel wildly and deeply invested.
Yay.
I already liked it before. And now, you know, I feel a part of it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So... And I'm not going to be that quiet and distinguished guest either.
Thank God.
If there are wristbands to be worn, I will have my wristband on. Like, going to Cleveland.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, we'll be there, and I hope to see you there. Thank you so much for joining the show. This was such a great conversation. Really, really appreciate it. And I want to give you the opportunity to plug whatever you want, whether it's your book or your social media or... whatever.
Well, Kristen and Joe, I can't tell you how much fun this is. I think we should do this weekly.
Yes.
I think we should, even if it's not for everyone to hear, because you guys are just obviously the best kind of music heads. And it's been a pleasure talking to you both. Speaking with you both. I'm Danielle Smith. I'm the author of Shine Bright, a very personal history of Black women in pop. It is now in paperback. I have a podcast. It is a Spotify original. It's called Black Girl Songbook. It centers the the work and the creativity of Black women who make pop music in particular, from Billie Holiday to Dionne Warwick to her to J-Hud, on and on and on and on. So that's pretty much me. Across social media, again, my name is Danielle Smith, D-A-N-Y-E-L Smith. Mm-hmm. But at social, I go by my high school nickname, which is Danamo, D-A-N-A-M-O. So, you know, I was the most irritating high school person.
Well, now I'm looking at your podcast and I'm like, okay, I see En Vogue. I see Mariah Carey. I see a podcast I will be subscribing to.
Oh, that is so fantastic. You guys are so great. Thank you again for having me.
This has been a blast. Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, our listeners know they can follow us at Rock Hall Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us at rockhallpod@gmail.com. Patreon soon. Once we can start talk to voters, that's where those episodes will go. But hang tight with that one. And thank you to Mike Lloyd for the logo, Yusu Kim for the music, and Pantheon Podcast for hosting us. I'm Joe Quazala.
I'm Kristen Studdard.
And who cares
about the Rock Hall? More people than you'd think.
Wow.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.